Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Welcome, you velveteen and vivacious gumdrops, to Cop On Podcast. It's been a while because life is, you know, complicated with the baby and all that stuff. Do bear with me. I'm bringing you these episodes as often as possible. And by next season, I do hope to be a lot more regular with them. So thank you for all of your patience. Thank you for your kind words that I've been receiving from email and all that stuff. Coponpodcast@gmail.com if you do want to get in touch. I'm delighted to be joined by Kev, by Spider LFC, and by Doug from the Dugout Football Channel on YouTube. Two absolutely marvellous YouTube channels and great guests to have. But before we get into the questions and all that stuff, I've got a poem, or at least the second stanza of a poem called Hope by Emma Lazarus, who was the poet from the late 19th century who actually wrote the poem that ended up as the inscription on the Statue of Liberty. You know, bring me your poor, you're hungry, all that stuff. But anyway, this is not from that poem. This is a different poem called Hope. And the second stanza, I think it's pretty good for us. How may joy dawn? In what undreamed of hour may the light break with splendor of surprise, disclosing all the mercy and the power? A baseless hope, yet vivid, keen and bright, as the wild lightning in the starless night. Spider LFC, do follow YouTube channel Spider LFC. Since the last time we spoke, before we get onto the footy, I saw you played a gig in front of 60,000 people in Germany. What was that all about? They love to rock. You love to rock. Was it a marriage made in heaven? You and 60,000 rockers?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, first of all, hello, Owen. Hello, Doug. How are you? It's nice to be on the channel again. Yeah, so yeah, the Munich thing. So we do, I have a rock show, as most of you know, and it's not really a band that plays gigs. It's more like an event type show. Kind of. It's like a band. It is a band, you know, but we play the bigger kind of festivals and the bigger venues and stuff like that, rather than just do local gigs weekly. I've done all that in the past, no longer, thank you. But it's but these days, yeah, we played on St. Patrick's Day. Yeah? We're not an Irish band or anything like that. We're Irish, but we're not an Irish playing music band. Mm-hmm. But we play a lot of rock stuff. We played directly after the St. Patrick's Day parade on the main stage in the middle of Munich. And there was, I think they had 94,500 people on that whole promenade. But at least 60,000 could see us, so which is great. And on the other side, way up in the other side of the stage, at the end of that kind of whole promenade, which is almost 2 kilometers in length, was Johnny Logan, and he was playing on the other stage, and he came to watch us for the first hour of our show, and you know, vice versa.
Who's that? I mean, honestly, Johnny Logan is about five famous people in the entire world. I'm completely out of it. If they're not footballers, I don't know who they are.
So Johnny Logan has won the Eurovision about 2 or 3 times.
Okay.
So he's got the most. He's got some of the most wins. So he's the guy that sings, you know, what's another year? That kind of one. So he's the guy that sings all of the. That kind of song. It was a major hit back in the 70s
sure
and 80s.
All of the listeners know, but honestly, honestly, if Johnny Logan or you know, Peter McFerris, it could be anyone to me, because I'm just so out of culture and pop culture and modern culture. I just live in France in this little town, spent time with a family. I avoid everything to do with what most people look at, I guess. Social media, all that stuff. Anyway, it's a nice life to do that if you want to, you know, like me, spurn it all. But anyway, going on to the footy, Kev. Oh,
yeah.
What's the name of your band before I forget?
The rock show is called The Hush, and our band, which we just released our first single from our album, is called The Blackwater Hush. The single is called Taint. And the album is called Tall Tales and Fables.
Very nice. I'll put a link in the description, people, so all of you listeners can check it out. Excellent stuff. Sorry, Doug's waiting patiently there. I'll come to you in a moment, Doug. I do want to talk footy with Kev first, because Kev, just very, you know, brief question. What's your hope like for the rest of the season?
Well, my hope hasn't disheartened. I mean, I expected Liverpool to have a bit of a dip, and the fact that we've shown as much grit and heart as we have all season, you know, also like in respect of the fact that we've had probably the most injuries out of most of the clubs that we've been in competition with for a long period of time. We lost our number one goalkeeper. You know, we lost our main centre-back for a while. You know, he was out. We lost... We've been in and out of having no left-back, no right-back for a period of time that we've been accustomed to for the last number of years. And you know, two of the guys that get forward the most in the team. And, you know, we've been represented well by Joe Gomez, who I think has been fantastic and has to be given a shout for the season so far. He's been our go-to James Milner really for most of the season in nearly every position from the midfield backwards. And also, you know, young Conor Bradley, who's broken into the fold and, you know, made a name for himself. And, you know, if anybody's going to push Trent into that midfield and have competition for Szoboszlai, it's going to be Bradley to do it. But yeah, look, the fact that we're in the position that we are, we're a point behind... You know, we're there within, as long as you're within that win of getting that league and your opponents can drop points, we're doing well, especially considering the season that we had last season and the drop off that we've had. You know, you have these kind of drop offs, but as a fan base, we didn't get on the back of Klopp. We didn't get on the back of the team. We expected these things. You know, there's a lot of to and fro online about how disappointed they are that we got a loss against Palace and we got, you know, we're out against Atalanta. But if this is the time that we've had our dip and we can turn it around from here on in without any more damage being done, then I think we're going to be okay to really push to the very last day and try and get this title out of City's hands. I think Arsenal will drop off a bit, and with their fixture list, even though you know you can't rule them out, but you just got to hope that City just has that, you know, these one or two draws or at least that one loss in them, that we can take over the porch of it and make it our own again. So hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I love it. I love the optimism. And I'm going to get on to some form stats that I found from the past couple of seasons. I'll come on to that in a minute. But, Doug, I want to bring you in here. Welcome back, Doug from the Dugout Football Channel. Delight to have Douglas with us. We are, I mean, still optimistic. I share Kev's optimism, but that's not based on the performances. Because if you look at the performances, we've had, and I worked out the other day, 78 shots with producing no goals from open play in the past like four matches or whatever, which is a pretty miserable statistic. How are you feeling?
Well, first of all, it's great to be back. It feels like an absolute age since I was last on it. Actually,
far too many moons ago. It's delightful to have you back.
And obviously good to see Kev as well, and hope you enjoyed Portugal. It looked very, very sunny where you were.
I did, very much so.
I'm pretty sure the same as Kev. I'm feeling pretty calm about things. Like, I think, you know, the next sort of three games are going to be very, very key. You know, I think we've got three away games in the space of 6 days. Obviously Fulham on Sunday, the Ev on Wednesday, and then I think it's West Ham on Saturday lunchtime, because obviously Arsenal lost to Bayern Munich. But I kind of agree as well with Kev, because we were bound to have a dip somewhere. Man City have had a dip. Arsenal look like they're now having a dip, probably at the wrong time. But, you know, people will probably say typical Arsenal when it comes to, you know, April. But I feel we are in our dip, and I think we can only sort of get out of it with a win on Sunday. And look, I think as well, with obviously, you know, City look like they're in a bit of free fall at the moment. I know they lost to Real Madrid on penalties, but being taken to extra time and then obviously penalties, I think I honestly would say Chelsea are slight favourites for the game against City today. So they're probably going to be going into that Brighton game thinking, you know, we'll probably only have the league to play for as well. So it's going to be a very, very interesting last six games. And as I said, you know, if Arsenal and City drop points, we have to take advantage. And you know what? I think out of the teams that I think we have left, I think Spurs have got to play everybody. Villa have got to play all three. Well, Villa have obviously beaten Arsenal. And I think Wolves, I think, are the other team that have to play all three as well. So Spurs, Villa and Wolves are definitely going to be the deciding factors between who wins the league and who loses the league, I think. But remaining calm, I think, it's the safest thing to say.
Very, very interesting answer. And there's loads that we're gonna get on to talking about in that. But yeah, the stat I was talking about before in terms of form, okay, I went to the boulangerie this morning, or the bakery, for those of you who don't know what a boulangerie is, and I had a very amazing quiche with a sort of cheesecake dessert, and I was very happy. I was in my element looking at footy stats. And if you're going to see Owen from Cop On anywhere in his element, that's where I am. So in the last five seasons, the last six games of the last five seasons, this is what Manchester City have done. Okay, so in 20, I'm going to go calendar years. So last year, 2023, in the last six games, Manchester City won four, drew one, and lost one. In 2022, Manchester City won five and drew one of their last six matches. In 2021, they won four and lost two. In 2020, they won five and lost one. And you had to go back to 2019, which was the last time that Manchester City actually won their last six matches. If they repeat that, I mean, in 2019, that was absolutely bananas, because they won their last 14 matches to win the league by a point or whatever. So, that, yeah. I mean, that's just absolutely, I mean, it's almost as if they're cheating. and Arsenal in the last five seasons, in their last six matches of the last five seasons, in their last six matches last year, they won three and lost three. In 2022, they won four and lost two. In 2021, they won five and lost one. In 2020, they won three, drew two, and lost one. And in 2019, they won two, drew one, and lost three. So Arsenal, as you mentioned before, they do tend to choke, although this is a different team. But I feel they're tired. I feel everyone's tired. You know, Man City and Arsenal both, they say, crashed out of Europe. I mean, that's the cliche, isn't it? Crashed out of Europe. I don't know if it was a crash. It was more of a sort of fart sound. They farted out of Europe last week. And I don't know, Kev, is this the Farmers League? Is everybody tired? I don't know. What's going on with the Premier League?
Well, it would have been a Farmers League if, you know, if it wasn't for Liverpool. But, you know, that's
beating Atalanta 1-0 in the return leg? Or?
Yeah, no. I mean, just in general, over the past few seasons, you know, City would have walked this league. I mean, and in saying that ourselves, we probably would have walked this league a few times if it hadn't been for City, you know, being in the position that they've been in. You know, we still would have been finishing 10, 12, 18 points, even sometimes 25 points ahead of our opponents. So if it wasn't for the two keeping each other honest, we would have had a Farmers League from one or the other. So, you know, in one way, City is cheating, which I will call it cheating, because if that's the case, and they have 115 charges, even if they get done with five of them, they're out of this league. You know what I mean? That's the way I see it. But if they've got evidence of 115 of them, they could be disbanded altogether and have to start a new team, start from scratch, make their way up, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's loads of little avenues that this thing can go. We'll find out in August when this hearing happens, and you know, we'll all be sitting here with bated breath. All of our channels will be just alive with fluttering and seeing what's going on, and will they hand titles to other people with the asterisks beside it? Will they just knock them off all their points at once and knock them down divisions? Will they go down divisions and have their titles taken off? You won't know. But anyway, saying that, I'd like to see the stats actually. I don't know if you had them for Liverpool's last six games or the.
Oh yeah, no, I don't have them actually. But okay. I'll bring them up.
I pretty much think I remember only having a couple of draws, but we've won most of them if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but at this stage though, Kev, we got to win all six matches to have a chance.
100%.
And you know, but really, I mean, it hasn't been done since 2019. And 2019 we were arguably a stronger team. Yeah. Last year, of course, we didn't do it. I know that. But let me just bring up
the only thing that I'm looking at going forward with our results is that Aston Villa have no progressed in Europe. We have to play them. They have a chance now in a semi-final, either side of our games, to really push on and win an actual European trophy. They're going to be concentrating on that. If they've already got the fourth or fifth place almost locked down, and you know, Spurs have no real chance of kind of creeping in there, and if you know, if that fifth spot is if we do get the fifth spot, let's say, and Aston Villa do something well, but it's looking more likely Italy are going to get it now. But like,
sorry, Kev, just to sort of come in there. The second last games of the season, We're away to Aston Villa. Arsenal are away to Manchester United. Yeah. Man City are away to Spurs.
Yeah, that'll tell you. That'll tell you straight away. And the fact that, like, you know, Aston Villa have been hot and cold this season. They've been brilliant and they've also been mediocre. You know, you remember early on in the season, they got hammered and they came back and won, they were winning games 4-5-1. They've been up and down, and that's, you know, it's just, that's Emery with an unfinished team, really. But a dangerous team, nonetheless. And at home, they can be dangerous. But I found that some of their best results have been, like, call me wrong on this, but it have been away from home this season. And the fact that we beat them 3-0 early in the season, you know, at Anfield, you know, and comfortably well, you know, and Villa's always been a good place for us to go to as a team. So that you know, Spurs, you know, if United have dropped off as much as they have, Spurs won't be in, and they've been off as well. You know, they've had very similar. Spurs, to me, have been kind of in a false position for a couple of seasons now, where how they've been in the top four, I'll never understand, because they've had some awful results and awful runs, but they got lucky at the same time because other teams around them have had the same type of runs. So, I mean, with Liverpool's position in last season and even United's and all that, were kind of false to me because mainly Spurs were there for so long in that fourth spot until they dropped down. But anyway, with regards our running for the season, I mean, Fulham I see is one of our toughest games out of all of them. It's something we're going to have to do on Sunday. Everton, you don't know what kind of Everton's going to turn up, but if you can silence that crowd early and win and you know, finish the game off as fast as you possibly can, we'll be looking good. I should be off for the West Ham game on the weekend myself. I'm going to the away game, I think, on the Saturday. All depends on tickets, there's something going on below, but I'm supposed to be going to that away game on Saturday. And I've seen us against West Ham in every game we played against them so far this season. I was there for the cup game, I was there for the thing, and we absolutely dominated them from start to finish. And even earlier in the season, West Ham were, I think, flying high in third or fourth ahead of us in the league when we beat them at Anfield at that time. And comfortably, well, we humbled them because they were playing brilliant football earlier in the season. But, you know, and then when it comes down to it, you've got Spurs. You don't know what kind of Spurs you're going to get. But I'm always confident against Spurs later in the season. Well, not as late as what we have them this time, but slightly earlier than late, because then they have bad runs for the last three or four games. But if we get them in that, like, fifth game to go, like we normally do, it's always like an either a stupid draw or something like that. But if we get them later in the season, you know, I think it favours us greatly, especially going into for a title race. And Wolves, you know, they gave us a scare against, you know, we were taking on City a couple of seasons ago for that top spot. You know, Villa gave us hope in the last game of the season, and you know, we turned it over against Wolves, and it still came to nothing. But look, we're easily capable of turning over Wolves at Anfield for the last game of the season in a title running. So, yeah, that's what I would expect to see. I would expect to see us go for all the wins, but Fulham frightens me the most. You know, what kind of everything they're going to turn up, and, you know, Spurs, depending on what Spurs turn up, kind of frighten me the most out of all of those. I think we can do Villa because they're going to be concentrating on that European spot or that European final if it comes up. Either side of that, we play them.
So it could work in our favour, that absolutely, absolutely. But there's loads to discuss. On Wolves, I mean, they're playing, as we're recording this, I mean, it's before they play Arsenal. I think they're on the beach. I think Wolves are safe. They've outperformed themselves. And if you look at their last results, I mean, they got hammered by Newcastle on the 2nd of March, 3-0. And then they won their next match at home, 2-1 on the 9th of March. But since then, they lost to Coventry in the FA Cup. They lost the local derby to Villa, 2-0. They drew with Burnley, which is like a loss. They lost at home to West Ham, and they drew away to Nottingham Forest. So their results have been really patchy after that huge disappointment of losing to Coventry in the FA Cup. So that's all good. That's all good news for anybody playing against Wolves, which is all of us, right? But I don't know, maybe by May they will, you know, Gary O'Neill finished very strongly with Bournemouth last year. Maybe he'll rally them, but I just think they're on the beach. Yeah, but Fulham, Doug. Our last five matches against Fulham at Craven Cottage, we've won 3 and drawn 2. So we've actually got pretty good record against them in the Premier League. In the League Cup semi-final, the last time we beat them 2-1 before drawing 1-1. We beat them 2-1 at Anfield on the 10th of January. It was an evening kickoff. And the team that day was Kelleher, Gomez, Van Dijk, Konate and Bradley. And then McAllister, Jones and Elliott and Gravenberch. with Diaz and Jota. So I suppose Elliot, Diaz and Jota were up front, and there was a midfield three of McAllister, Jones and Gravenberch. So Gravenberch, excuse me. So, Doug, it's going to be a very different team. I mean, unless you're expecting Harvey Elliott, Luis Diaz and Diogo Jota to start up front. What do you think is the best? I don't, because looking at Fulham, how they played Liverpool, the last time we played them at Craven Cottage was in August 2022 when Thiago Alcantara was in the team and Jordan Henderson and Fabinho, that was our midfield, and Bobby Firmino was playing. So, you know, a lot has happened since then. So I'm going to say that this is a chance to play a brand new team. And I think that Trent Alexander-Arnold was so good for 45 minutes the other night. I think he's going to be the key. And I just think Fulham, they haven't played our first team. And that gives me cause for optimism again. What kind of team are you thinking of for tomorrow?
Well, I've got to say, I totally agree with what Kev said about Fulham. I think this is our hardest away game left. Because if you look at Fulham, like, I don't think we've won at Craven Cottage since 2019. I think it was a James Milner penalty that actually won us the game that day. If my memory serves me correctly, I think Mane scored that that day as well. Fulham are a very funny side. They blow hot and cold. I really like Robinson. I really like their left back. I like Tete as well. But Polina's the one for me. Every time I see Joe Polina play, I always think that Fulham are a much better team with him than they are without him, because I think they struggle without Polina as well. Rodrigo Muniz as well. He seems to be a player that seems to have a purple patch, and then he'll go sort of off the boil a couple of times. Dirk Adorva-Reed is still a very, very good player. And, you know, you've got to give credit. Andres Pereira is having a good season for Fulham as well. But in terms of sort of team, obviously, we'll obviously have Alisson back. You know, it's good to have, obviously, Alisson back as well. But, yeah, I think it'll be Trent. I think Konate, Van Dijk. I think Robertson will definitely play as well. And there's a sort of a question mark. I know Endo got a bit of a break at the week against Atalanta. Does he come straight back in? I think you'd probably say that. I think it'll probably be Endo, McAllister, Szoboszlai, even though I want to see maybe Harvey Elliott from the start. And then I think,
what would you do instead of what you think? No, but what would you do instead of what you think Klopp would do? What would you do? What would you do in midfield?
If it was me in midfield, I would say Endo, Maka, and probably Elliott. Because I think Harvey Elliott deserves a start, see what he can do. And then I think the front three for me would be Diaz, Jota, Salah.
Diaz, Jota and Salah, very interesting, very interesting.
The only variant I would give from that is because Harvey Elliott has gotten booed and hasn't had the best games in the last couple of games against Fulham because we got him from Fulham. And he constantly gets booed there, so probably Elliot would be probably somebody I'd bring on later. Like, for me, within our squad, I love how Jota can score goals. I love how Elliot can create chances, and I love how good they've been all season. But they've been better when they came off the bench rather than starting. And I think with even the way Jota came on the other night, he didn't really get into the game against Atalanta. You know, he came on and it was our worst 40. Like, we went from a great 45 minutes to a mediocre getting closed down 45 minutes. A lot of the time, we're not creating enough chances. Jota was far too deep. McAllister, I think Endo should have come in on earlier. Not even when Endo has a bad game, you start him the next game because it frees up McAllister. If McAllister's too deep in our team, he doesn't create the opportunities that he's been creating in the last few months within the Liverpool squad. So Endo has to sit in there. Even, you know, as good as McAllister can be in that number six role, somebody has to be there with him, so it frees him up. I think we play our best football when he's freed up and he gets to cover whoever the DM is. You could nearly even stick Joe Gomez in there. You could nearly stick Trent in there and he will still cover him, but I wouldn't make him our main DM, especially for the remaining game of the season, our remaining games of the season, because he needs to be creative. So Szoboszlai can get back and help as well if he's there in that midfield. So for me, I would agree with having Endo and McAllister in there. Szoboszlai, I don't know what's going on with him. He works really well. He tracks really well. He works really well. He's just not been creating enough for me from an attacking midfield point of view. And Elliot, you know, can also go in there. But For me, I'd love to see Trent give Szoboszlai a run and stick Bradley in the back, the right back position. Because I said it since day one that Trent should be replacing Henderson and that right hand side of that midfield, because he's now got the nose and the experience of playing as a right back. So his defensive work is still there. And I know with his inverted role, he's kind of doing that at the moment. But I think they get on top of each other, him and Szoboszlai, when they're too close. I think if you free up that area for Trent, it pushes Salah further up the field as well and stuff. Salah dropping back so deep, because the defense has to get worried when you've somebody as creative as both of those players, you know, in that position. But you can't have them playing at the same time, I think.
You will play, because obviously Bradley's injured. Yeah. So you're going to play Joe Gomez at right back. I play Trent Joe Gomez in midfield.
Yeah. I would play Trent in midfield on the right hand side, and I would have Endo and McAllister. And then bring on Szoboszlai and Elliot to cover. Maybe if Salah's got tired legs, maybe if if Endo's maybe getting a bit overrun or so, you could still drop Trent into that position. You know, Andy Robertson's has been playing better in recent weeks, but still looks a little tired after his injury. You know, Jota's going to need game time. So is Trent, but I just want to see what it looks like with Trent, Endo and McAllister in that midfield and see.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I would be tempted to drop Mo Salah, that might sound a bit nuts, but I think he's bring him off the bench when Fulham are a bit tired. And I think if footballers had more humility to accept that role, especially star footballers like Mo Salah, then it could be absolutely devastating. You know, bring him on with 30, even 40 minutes to go, bring him on 50 minutes against a tiring Fulham that had given the advantage. But what do I know? He might get a first half hat trick. But I would be tempted to do exactly what you said, Kev, but put Szoboszlai and play a five-man midfield to outnumber them in midfield, because I think our midfield has looked particularly lethargic and particularly off the pace.
Overworked,
especially McAllister, who's just played 90 after 90 after 90. He's playing all of these matches. He actually did quite well against Atalanta with 85.5% passing accuracy from 94 touches, which is a lot more than in the first leg where he only got about 70 touches because he was man-marked. So he did a lot better with that. But Ibu Konate as well at the back, I mean, it's his passing accuracy that people have been talking about. Yeah. You know, teams are giving him the ball, letting him have the ball. They're not pressing Ibu because they think it's more or less safe. His passing accuracy was 81% compared to Jarrell Kwanza, who for the season is 88%. Sorry, to clarify, Konate's passing accuracy against Atalanta the other night was 81%. And I'll bring it up in the match before that, because it's not fair just to judge him on one game. So I'll bring it up against Crystal Palace, but I think it was more or less the same. Let me try and bring it up for you. Give me a moment, because Crystal Palace, I mean, blimey, we haven't recorded a podcast since then. That was a pretty dire performance. And we've been knocked. Touch of the Wolves. They were knocked badly by losing to Coventry, and Liverpool getting knocked out by Man United in the FA Cup. I believe that has knocked us as well. But yeah, Konate, so against Crystal Palace, his passing accuracy was 84.5%. It's not good enough from a centre-back. You want at least 86, 87%. 88% is good. It's very good. That's where Kwanza is. And Virgil's on about 90%. You know, for example, that's what you really want, 90 plus. Yeah, but I just think Trent can make a massive difference. Seeing him back there, it's the joy of football. It's the joy of football. That's Trent for me. He's just everything that football is. When Trent's on form, it's just like, you know, you're watching these passes and it's like it takes your breath away and it makes your heart flutter. And you're like, my God, how did he even see it, let alone do it? The man's a genius. And he's key to everything we do. So I love the idea of putting him in midfield. A free role. That's what I would do.
My disappointment is if I see Jones starting again. Not that I have anything against Jones. It's just that I found him too negative and gone back to before his injury, he was fantastic.
Okay.
Since he came back from his injury, he's been too negative. And where multiple times Szoboszlai was running through on goal, Gakpo was running through on goal, Nunez was running through on goal, and Salah. And instead of doing that, he did the the Jordan Henderson thing where he kind of turned around, based his back line, went left, right, left, right, left, right, and then released it. He's gone
it's
back
like he's under instruction to never take any risks, so he never does. He's had one too many bollocking from Jurgen for having given the ball away, so now he just doesn't bother giving the ball away. And his passing accuracy is up at like 93%, which is crazy for a midfielder. Sorry, 91.1%.
That's all well and good when you're passing it backwards.
Exactly. I agree. Where do you stand on that, Doug?
Curtis. Yeah, absolutely. I think Jones has kind of lost a bit of yard of pace since his injury as well. I think it's taken him a little bit of time to sort of get back to speed. I actually think the hamstring injury Salah got has actually affected him as well. I know people say obviously it's Ramadan and all this as well, but I do think the injury to Salah has given him a little bit of just a kick up the backside to know that I think he has lost a bit of pace recently. And as well, I think I'm with you, and I wouldn't be too surprised if he does get maybe a place on the bench tomorrow because of the games that we've got coming up. Like Everton away, I think, is the sort of the more important game. If I'm being honest, you know, I think a derby game is definitely, you know, the most important. But I think if he was to be dropped onto the bench, then you could maybe put maybe Szoboszlai on the right, or maybe Harvey Elliott there as well. But yeah, totally agree with what Kev said about Jones. I think he just needs to be on the bench. Just come on, give us some fresh legs when Fulham are tiring, and we'll see. But yeah, I think Jones is. There's a couple of players in there. I think that's just getting back to speed with things after really bad injuries, and I think Jones is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of that in the team, isn't there? Jota, who you mentioned before, Kev. I was so disappointing against Atalanta. I know he's coming back, but he received the ball seven times. He tried to play seven passes and gave the ball away five times of those seven. It's just not good enough, especially when it came on with half an hour to go, half an hour of football. Yeah. You're only trying seven passes. And, you know, and also the less said about Darwin Nunez, the better, because he only had two passes attempted. So he's obviously, he hardly touched the ball against Atalanta. So you've got to give them credit.
Absolutely. I gave Atalanta credit. Even the Crystal Palace game, when everybody was having a meltdown, Crystal Palace defended for their lives in that game. And when I say that we missed chances, we only missed one clear-cut chance, which was Jones. The rest of them were all blocked or saved, you know, so they weren't like bad chances. Like, I mean, Darwin Nunes hammered it at the goal, the keeper saved it. You know, Salah's chances, even, you know, the chances even when Jota came on earlier. Jota was great when he came on against Crystal Palace. We didn't see that same Jota against Atalanta. So, you know, whether these guys, whether, as you say, Doug, as well, whether Salah has got it on his mind that he's feeling the hamstring, or he's worried about it because it's his first time in history kind of dealing with a hamstring injury, or that thing, maybe it's kind of a mental factor where he's trying not to run too much or do too much for fear of, you know, especially in the middle, when he was in the middle of Ramadan and he's now kind of coming back from that. So hopefully we see the best of Salah for the last previous few games, and it can, you know, keep people quiet about having to completely sell him off or whatever. Because I would rather Salah finish his career at Liverpool. Liverpool don't need to get that kind of money, because we have the money now. We're one of the most profitable teams. So even though that money would be handy to put back into another player, the money is there. It's just who wants to spend it right. And Michael Edwards, I think, came out recently and started talking about how his absence, he didn't like the majority of the signings that happened in his absence when he left the club.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. What, he actually spoke in public or someone tapped his phone?
Yeah, he spoke, and he was, Florian Plateau was after commenting on it or putting a piece out about it. And he said that he wasn't happy with some of the signings. Obviously, he's going to be happy with McAllister. You know, Szoboszlai hasn't had a chance to get going yet. But I think he's referring to your Darwin Nunes, as your Gakpos, your Gravenberks. You know, Diaz has been okay. If Diaz could get up on the left-hand side, he'd be the best player on the planet nearly at the moment, because if he can cross a ball from the left-hand side, but he constantly cuts in on that right and because he's always got two guys on him, it doesn't allow Robertson to do the underrun or the overlap either. So it's kind of hard, because that was some of the best features to Liverpool's football, when you had your Trents and your Robbos getting under or getting outside the wingers. We haven't done that in a long time with our football since, you know, we kind of went inverted. So I'd like to see a bit more of that because I think we can cause more damage, especially with the height of Nunes, especially with the height of Gakpo, especially with the height of Gravenberch that can get in there in the box. It's now you need the crosses from Trent and Robbo to get into the box, and we're not seeing it. So for me, like if he's not afraid, as they say, Edwards is to sell players to fund the other players, then so be it. As I said, I'm done with the days where I'm completely loyal to a player. I think the last player I was fully loyal to in a Liverpool shirt was Steven Gerrard, and even before that, I think these days if it's not working for the club, I want to see competition, and I want to see the best. I want to see two people of equal capable means battling in it for the same spot because it can only benefit the team.
Yeah, but you see, Mickey E, Big Mick, Mike, the Edwards, the E guy, the E child, he loves his stats. And Mo Salah is in the 98th or 99th percentile for non-penalty XG, total amounts of shots, assists, expected goals and expected assists. And he's in the 79th percentile for shot-creating actions. He's the 81st percentile for progressive passes, which is extremely good. Yes. Touches in the attacking penalty area, he's in the 99th percentile. So he's among the best in the entire world still at what he does. So I'm pretty sure Mickey E is going to stick. He's not going to twist.
Nope.
But Fulham, Doug, I want to bring you back to Fulham because you mentioned João Pelinha. He's back. He was injured for a while for them. But Fulham are an absolutely bonkers team because I whenever I see them, they play well, but I miss the ones where they play badly. I don't know if you've looked at their results, but I'll give you a few of them now. Since the beginning of March, right, they smashed Brighton 3-0. And it's like, wow, if you're Real Madrid, you'd be very happy with 3-0 versus Brighton. That's a great result. Then they lost the next match to Wolves 2-1. Then they beat Tottenham 3-0. And again, if you're Real Madrid and you beat Tottenham 3-0, you're like, wow, that's a great result. Then they drew with Sheffield United 3-3. Then they lost to Nottingham Forest. Then they lost at home to Newcastle. And then in the last match, they went away to West Ham and they won 2-0. And Real Madrid would be very happy with 2-0 away at West Ham. So they're either Real Madrid or, you know, Real Ilmarnock. I don't know. To bring it to your countrymen, Doug, no offence, with respect to Scottish football. What's a pub near you in Edinburgh? Do you have a pub?
We've got a pub called the Tiles.
Okay, so it's like the Real Tiles FC.
Yeah.
Or Real Madrid. So against West Ham, their lineup, Doug, they had Andreas Pereira. I'm worried about him. Brilliant footballer. Really underrated. He scored 2 goals against West Ham. And their lineup in their last match against West Ham, they won 2-0, was Muniz up front with Pereira behind in the 10. Willian on the left and Iwobi on the right. They had Lukic and Pelinha, 2 holding midfielders. And then at the back, they had Robinson, Bassi. I'm going to mess up the pronunciation. Sorry. Adarabioyo and Castagne.
I'm not very good with pronunciation, so I'm not the
person. That's okay. I believe it's a Nigerian name. I might be wrong. I believe it is, but he's Irish, isn't he? I'm not sure. Adarabioyo. Adarabioyo, but there you go. He's an English professional footballer. It says
Adebayeho.
If you prefer,
Adebayeho. Yeah.
Well, his full name, according to Wikipedia, is Abdul Nasir Olowatosin Oluwadoyin Solami Tosin Adarabioyo. So, I mean, you know, good luck to Martin Tyler or whoever's going to commentate on this game, saying his full name. But I'm not sure. But they call him Tosin anyway. I think Tosin's on the back, so we'll go with Tosin. There you go. I mean, he's good whenever I've seen him. That's the point. Yeah, he's been a good player. He's a great defender. But that team, if it's unchanged against Liverpool, that's enough to put the fear of fear of, you know, I don't know, the plague into Liverpool, or at least the fear of drawing or losing. It's a very strong team, isn't it? But then if you look at the results, sorry, Kev?
No, I said, haven't Fulham had the least amount of injuries? Like, they've had the most amount of fully fit squads all season.
Yeah, I think you might be right, yeah.
Even when you look up the
stats, when you look up the stats, it always says Fulham, fully fit squad yet again. And I'm like, wow. Wait, how many? I wonder how many times they've had a fully fit squad all season. So yeah, I don't know.
Good. That's very good. Yeah. I hadn't seen that, but I've got their home form in front of me. They had 16 home matches. They've only conceded 16 goals, which is the fourth best in the top 10 in the Premier League. They're very, very good at home, not conceding goals, but they've only scored 29 from 16 matches, so they're not very prolific. The stats point towards a very cagey game, Doug. I imagine that's what you're expecting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think you know, some of the players you mentioned there, like Calvin Bassey, obviously known from his time at Rangers. He was very, very good. He was very good at Ajax as well. He's had a very good season for Fulham. Iwobi's had a very good season as well. You know, as we said, they're a very funny side, Fulham. You know, one week they're winning at Old Trafford. The next week, they're you know, drawing 3-3 with Sheffield United. It's, I think at one point, I think they were 3-1 down. I think they had to come back to get a draw, like 3-3 as well. But yeah, all our games with Fulham this season have been very, very close games. Obviously, the 4-3 at Anfield, I think they took the lead as well. I seem to remember that as well. I think Deckard Overeem, who I really rate, as well. I think he scored. Was obviously Harry Wilson. He scored as well. And look, I think as well, it's going to be a very cagey affair. I think you're absolutely right as well. But I just think if you get Trent on free kicks, we saw what he did at Anfield. I think he scored, obviously scored twice, but allegedly he did score twice. But they actually took a goal away from him. They took it as a Bernd Leno own goal. It was the free kick that went off the underside of the crossbar, and actually it did actually go off Leno's back. So the fact that they've taken that goal away from Trent just speaks for itself. So obviously that was a Leno own goal, but we'll just say Trent scored twice out there anyway. But I think creativity is going to be very, very important, because I think they've got a lot of creativity with obviously Andreas Pereira. Willian, we all know, you know, the record with him as well. So I think it could be decided by a set piece. It could be decided by a set piece on Sunday. And you know what? I think McAllister's going to be very, very key in this game as well with his creativity. And look, we'll just wait and see. We'll just wait and see what will happen. I think it was 2-2 last season. I think that was the opening game of last season. I think it was... I think Salah scored twice in that game as well. Look, our games against Fulham have been very, very cagey affairs this season. I fully expect a completely same battle on tomorrow as well. I'm kind of happy it's 4:30 as well. You know, it just gives us a little bit more sort of recovery time as well. But as we say, Fulham blow hot and cold. So it just depends what Fulham turn up on the day. Marco Silva doesn't have a particularly good record against us. So fingers crossed that we meet a really sort of tired, lethargic Fulham rather than the energised one that we saw at Anfield earlier this season.
I think as well, if we look, by the time it hits Thursday, or by the time we finish with Everton on Wednesday, we could actually be 4 points clear of City, and you know, and they still then have to go to Brighton on the Thursday away from home at an 8 o'clock kickoff in an evening time where, you know, you're traveling, like, it's a long journey down to Brighton. I mean, I don't know if they fly down there these days, but I know a lot of
they would fly, yeah.
So, but look, at the same time, that's still a tough game to go away to with, you know, Brighton at home. There's potential there for a draw. There's a potential that Liverpool could be 3 points clear of City, although, you know, they'll probably still have a game in hand, but our goal difference would be better. And I'd rather that any day of the week than to be chasing City and go to another time where we're 1 point behind them coming the end of the season again. You know, I'd rather it comes down to the goal difference and it comes down to that, you know. So at the moment, there's 2 points there. I think it's all, we get to our 77 points out of these games. You know, Arsenal have Wolves away and Chelsea in that same period. So, you know, we need to... We need to capitalize, and that's Wolves away as well, and Chelsea at home. And Chelsea have come into form a bit recently. Palmer's been, you know, been great for Chelsea, and they've been actually winning games or just drawing high games against top six opponents. So the good thing about us is that, you know, we haven't had the greatest record against top six opponents this season, but, you know, that means that we've pretty much, you know, when it comes into playing Spurs, we normally kind of get a result against them when we do get that kind of record. But it means we're doing the job against the other teams below us. But if we get to that 77 points by the time it hits Wednesday night, you know, I'll be pretty happy with that. And, you know, just rooting on for Brighton, that if we can get any distance between us and City, even with that extra game in hand that they'll have coming up over the previous couple of weeks, you know, I'll take that all day. But I mean, they've still got Chelsea twice, right? Starting today. And
Arsenal City have got City, but no, City have, no, they played Chelsea in the league twice already. Yeah, they had two draws, but they're playing in the FA Cup today.
Yeah, but that's two legs, right? The FA Cup?
No, it's one. Legs? No, that's the
back to one leg. Okay. Yeah, the legs are too late. So it's a one-off.
Both semis are at Wembley, Kev.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's a good point though, because even if Chelsea, I mean Chelsea, I'm looking at their record now actually, since they lost to Liverpool in the League Cup final, Virgil, with the glory. Hold on to that one, boys and girls. What a great memory that is. they're actually unbeaten. They've won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They've won 5 and drawn 3. Of the matches since then, since the 25th of February. So that's a very good run for them. That's a lot of hope for them. And they, of course, they smashed 6 past Everton, which is always, you know, bravo, lads. But they've got a big say in the matter because they've got Man City in the FA Cup, and then they've got Arsenal at Arsenal Stadium, and then they've got Villa at Villa's Stadium. Then they're at home to Spurs and at home to West Ham and away to Forest and away to Brighton. But the big games against Arsenal and Villa, especially, you know, in terms of top four and the title race, they're going to be huge and a massive dent to the confidence if they are able to beat Manchester City. A big further dent in the confidence of Pep and his cheating buddies. The better. But this is the thing. It's a really great point about the effect that I didn't realise that the effect it could have of the next two games is we could be 3 points ahead of City. That could be huge. I think this is it, because there seems to be a lack of belief in the Liverpool fan base, Doug. This is the thing that I noticed, you know, in the past couple of games, atmosphere-wise. It's been very flat. I think it would take one win, only one win, against Fulham, for example, to turn that around. You know, obviously, we've got 3 away games. If we manage to win all 3, then, of course, the belief will be back. But I just think it would take one game and one win for Liverpool to, you know, get the ring of fire, you know, steal back.
As I said earlier, like, you know, one win will be very, very good for us. And then, you know, obviously going to that Everton game, like, you know, I think Everton have got Forest this weekend, so like that'll be the what are people calling it, the PSR derby, the points deduction derby. So I think, you know, if that's obviously the first game on Super Sunday. You know, if they were to lose that, going to Merseyside Derby, you know, we get an early goal to silence the crowd. That'll be very, very good. But yeah, Fulham, if we can win that, that's a big hurdle for me past, because, you know, our recent record of Fulham is not the best. And then obviously I think it's West Ham after the Everton game.
Yes.
Again, West Ham are a team that really blow hot and cold. The fan base is completely divided over whether they want Moyes to stay as well. But I think if we look at like the games this week coming up, obviously Arsenal got Chelsea. You don't know what Chelsea side is going to turn up. Chelsea will not want to lose against Arsenal. I think that's the safest thing. Now their fans will be expectant of getting something from the Emirates. I actually think Arsenal's dip has now started, and I think I think they will probably now fall away, and I think it'll be between Liverpool and City. If I'm being totally honest, especially with the games left. Yeah. I think as well. Is the next weekend the North London Derby, Spurs, Arsenal?
So, yeah, so the next games are Wolves, Chelsea, Spurs, Bournemouth, Man United and Everton.
Ouch, definitely. And as well, that Manchester United game. I know United have been god-awful this season. And
they've been good against top six. They've been better against top six than they have been against lower sides. They're pretty much Liverpool in the 90s or the early 2000s where... Yeah. They'll do well against the top sides and then just fall away against the other sides. So, you know,
how the tide has turned, as they say. But look, I think if we can get a win against Fulham, that'll be absolutely massive and absolutely key. And then going to the Everton game and then going to the West Ham game. If we get three away wins, then the belief will definitely be there going into that Spurs home game. Villa, as Kev said, they are probably going to be, I would imagine that they'll probably get to the final. I know they've got a really hard game against Olympiacos coming up, but I would expect them to win, you know, as a Fenerbahce, it's one of those two. But I would expect Villa to be in the Europa Conference League final, because obviously they've got the tactician in Emery, who is a very good manager when it comes to Europe as well. So I think a lot of people in our fan base have been a bit, you know, thinking that yes, the game against Palace, we kind of blew it, but then look what happened. Arsenal lost to Aston Villa, which I don't think anyone kind of expected as well. There will still be twists and turns before the end of the season. I don't think any of the teams left are going to go unbeaten. I think City are going to drop points. I think Arsenal are now in a way where you could probably see that Wolves game tonight. It's difficult. A difficult away game. Difficult away game. They made it difficult for us when we were at Molyneux earlier in the season. And they've still got to go to City as well. There will still be twists and turns before the end of the season. You mark my words, Arsenal and City will definitely drop points. It's just whether or not we can kind of stay away from the dropping points. And it's all about taking advantage. And when we come out with three away wins, the belief will definitely be there.
The when you get excited, I wonder if you were going to say something, but when I'm looking at the way the league started or the league sets up for the rest of the table, right? Because I mean, Aston Villa now are currently 3 points ahead of Spurs, but Spurs have a game in hand. So they're going to be battling there for that fourth spot unless they can do something themselves about, you know, winning that conference league, which can help the numbers for the Premier League to get the fifth spot, the coefficient. But, you know, Newcastle United, both on 50 points, level with Spurs, even to get to that fifth, they're getting nowhere near the Champions League now, Newcastle and United. So Spurs are really their only competition. So if we can see, they play both Olympiacos games, actually, is who they have to play, and they have to play Brighton in between that. We just play them after that. So by the time it gets to that stage, it could come to a point where they're either battling for that fourth spot and really want it, or, you know, they're content with going for that Conference League and getting into the Europa League spot anyway, you know. So it depends, but I don't think they will. I think they'll want to go for Champions League. So It worries me a little bit, but their form hasn't been the greatest. Villa, hot goal. Spurs either lose and win with hardly any draws. So, you know, it's Aston Villa that can draw against you. After the Olympiacos game, we could be that dip that they have and then probably go on and think, great, we can get that last two game. We can get the win in the last day and just stay ahead of Spurs and hopefully do it that way is what they think, especially if we beat Spurs. If we beat Spurs, it makes that Villa game so much easier for them because they can then afford to lose it with their goal difference and stay ahead of Spurs and win it on the last day. So, you know, that Spurs game has become even more important out of all of those. So beating Spurs helps Aston Villa.
And also as well, Spurs' away form this season has been really dreadful. Mm. Like I watched them against Newcastle and goodness me, that could have been 5, 6, or 7, or 8. They always seem to have like a mentality block when it goes to going to like St. James's Park. And I think they lost to Manchester United. I think at Old Trafford as well. Like you were saying, like Man United do have a better record against sort of top six sides, as well. So as I said, Villa, Spurs, Wolves—they're going to be the key three teams to decide where this title could go. It could actually end up all three teams could still have a chance of winning it on the final day of the season.
Well, of course, and there were so many ramifications and there were so many possibilities, and we can talk about the options for many hours. But I do just have one final question, and it's not to do with the running. It's because Jurgen managed. Jurgen Klopp managed his final game in Europe for Liverpool the other day. And in a sense, it was a sad way to go out because we lost to Atalanta, and that was a big surprise to many people, but not me, because, you know, I look at all the stats and Atalanta, they had every chance of beating us. But on a positive note, Jurgen Klopp has been an absolute giant in Europe for us. And I just want to talk about just your favorite memory. I don't care if it's the obvious one or what might be obvious, because there are several obvious ones for me. But your favorite memory of Liverpool in Europe under Jurgen Klopp. Kev, have you got one? Or
Doug, I've got a few.
What's the first one that comes to mind? Not necessarily, you don't have to choose number one favorite that you have to stick by for the rest of your life. But when I talk about great moments in Europe, what's the first one that comes to mind?
In Europe? Well, I go back to the Champions League final. We beat them. And it's just watching that video of Jurgen Klopp's six-minute period of when he was on the sideline and he won, and just watching him there, how he acted with the opposition. How he acted, you know, there's some funny moments he's had in there. I could sit here and probably do an hour's worth, you know, on the podcast. His face when Sadio Mane turned Neuer and coincide out and chipped the ball over into the goal. You know, there's multiple times. It's just, I could do like my favorite facial expression. I could do my favorite, you know, moment of his. I could do my favorite attitude, my favorite playing with his opposition. Just, there's so many. I mean, Jurgen Klopp is going to be talked about the same way that Bill Shankly was talked about, the same way that, you know, Kenny Dalglish was talked about for many years to come, the same way that even, you know, we praised Benitez at the time for as much as what he did for Liverpool, you know, winning the Champions League and whatnot. But Jurgen Klopp has surpassed him and then some, like by a country mile, you know. So it's, you know, he deserves to be on all the flags going forward, along with, you know, Bill, Bob, and, you know, Kenny and even Rafa and, you know, but he needs to be ahead of all the majority of these right up until Bill and Bob. I mean Bob is the best we've ever had, but, you know, with the return on trophies. But Jurgen Klopp has just been, he just gets Liverpool, he gets the fan base, he gets the city, he gets how the club works, he gets how the club should work. He understands what kind of football needed to be played to entertain the crowd. He understood, you know. So if I'm going to favorite moments, it's always got to be the relief on his face when you see him after the Champions League final, that he's been justified with all these, you know, the amount of kind of times he failed with Dortmund and all of that. And, you know, I can't look past, you know, even outside Europe when we won the league, and he's crying. And, you know, one of my favorite, it's him on the back of the bus and just counting the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and not making it about him.
It's
when you just see that and he's just laughing at the crowd with a beer in it, you know, a beer in his hand doing it. It's just, it just sums him up really, of how relaxed he is about it and how much he cares about the city. And that the fact that he didn't make it ever about himself, and he just made it about the club and the fans. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant answer. Brilliant answer. What about you, Doug?
Oh, so many. I mean, you probably go back to the early sort of days. Borussia Dortmund, that game was an absolute cracker. I remember basically going into that game and thinking, yeah, we could probably, you know, I think Dortmund were one of the sort of the top sort of German sides at that time as well. And, you know, obviously they had Aubameyang and Gundogan. They had some team that day. And, you know, the fact that we won 4-3, you know, well, I think at one point, I think we were 2-0 down at half-time, and then look what happened. I think, obviously, Origi scored, and then Coutinho, Sacco, remember him? Sacco, he scored as well. And then, obviously, Lovren in the very, very last minute. And then, Gundogan's free kick. I still think to this day how that didn't go in, and as well. But, yeah, Dortmund, Barcelona.
Where were you for these things, Doug? Where were you? Were you just at home watching this stuff at home, or were you in the Tides pub or whatever it's called, the Tiles?
I was just at home watching these games, and as well. But yeah, there's been so many. But the one moment for me that really, really sums Jurgen up as a man is that you get the unexpected. But there was what it's after we won the Champions League, and I think he had an interview. I can't remember the interviewer's name. It's the Norwegian guy, Fjørtoft, Jaga Fjørtoft. He just decides to start going into song. He basically goes, let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about all the things you and me. Let's talk about sex. And it's just that's just what gets Jürgen as a man. He has been magnificent for us. And yeah, the saddest thing is we've only got, I think I read this, 33 days with him left in charge. I don't know how I'm going to feel when he leaves. I think a lot of people will be emotional, especially that game against Wolves is going to be one hell of a game. And I just hope that the last six games motivates the players more, that we can do this for Jürgen and go out and go on the biggest high, and that is to obviously win the Premier League.
You just reminded me of what Klopp's attitude means to the club and how much he can lift players and fan base, even at our worst moments. And it was that first loss against Real Madrid in 2019. Was it 2018? That was 2018.
2018, yeah.
Yeah, we went and won it in 2019. So in the 2018, he was seen after the game, you know, after everything calmed down, after losing Real Madrid, after all the luck that they had, and singing with the fans. You know, we saw the European Cup, Madrid went and effed it up. And then, you know, and they said we'll bring it back to Liverpool back, and the next year they won it. But that just lifted us and drove us on, I think, as a fan base as well, where the disappointment was for about, if I remember, just one day. I remember like just feeling a bit deflated the next day, then watching that video, and it lifted me directly back up. And then we went on this amazing few years of, you know, winning the Champions League, the Super Cup, the Club World Cup, the Premier League after that, you know, doing the two domestic cups in the season, like right each season on the cups that we've won, you know, we were, you know,
and been very unlucky at the same time.
Very, very
more. But no, I mean, there's so much. Sorry to cut across you, because I want to go into these memories in another podcast. Yeah. But we're going to do a bit down the line, because I do actually have to chip off. But I mean, I want to end on that happy Jürgen Klopp note. And also, Doug, you were talking about the idea of, you know, the players finding the motivation, the fans as well, not only motivation, but belief that we can do this. And historically, no team, you know, was extremely rare for a team to win their last six matches. So we've got every right to expect there to be, as you say, twists and turns, hopefully. But the thing for me is I like to imagine, I was thinking about it this morning, imagine that the League Cup final hasn't been played yet and it's to be played at the end of the season after the last league match. And exactly the same thing transpires as really happened on the 25th of February. So it's a 0-0 draw and then extra time, and then Virgil comes. And that's the moment and that's the feeling that I'm going to take from this season, regard if we don't do it. If we do manage to you know, defeat the odds and take this Premier League title, then of course that's another level of elation. But I'm not going to be like, you know, I'm not going to be disappointed if we don't get there, is what I'm trying to say, because I've still got that, you know, Jürgen Klopp, Jadon Dans inspired, Bobby Clark inspired extra time win with Big Verge. I'm still buzzing off that, and that's going to take a long time to come down from that cloud. But anyway, thank you so much, Kev. Kev, Spider LFC. Brilliant to have you with us, Kev. And Doug as well from the Dugout Football Channel. So great to have you back with us after all this time, Doug. Thank you so much. Any other business before we head out? Or we've covered quite a lot.
Not really. Just go and do these last six games, and you know the fan base gets behind. Let's chit chat on social media about dropping points. We're in a title race. Every single one of us have dropped points at certain points throughout the season. We've had our dips. Arsenal are having their dip. You know, City have had the odd dip. You know, hopefully they can just dip that one more time at least, and just, you know, and just get behind the team and, you know, be happy in comparison to last season and how dire it was and how everything was done and dusted early in the season. We were out of everything. We weren't involved in anything. And the fact that we can take this right to the last day against Club 1-1-5 and against, you know, rejuvenated Arsenal side that might or might not be there by the end of the season. We don't know. and they don't know if we're going to be there either. But, you know, with our fan base, we can certainly guarantee that, you know, it brings at least 30-35% of that passion to these players. So go and do it, is what I would say.
Great stuff. And bring it home. Doug, any final thoughts? Thank you very much, Kev.
Just get behind the team. You just never know in a title race, especially with us as well. You just never know. So get behind the team and, yeah, see what happens in the last six games. And, yeah, get behind the boys. No negativity. Just get behind the boys. And as is the sort of the national thing about Liverpool, you'll never walk alone.
Fabulous stuff. Thank you so much. You'll never walk alone indeed. Thank you, Doug. Couldn't have said it any better. Take care, all of you, whoever you are, wherever you are, listening across this beautiful planet. And, yeah, we'll see you soon after Liverpool win at least one away game, but preferably two or even three.